This Dulectures episode features the fastest person to run a double Bob Graham round, Nicky Spinks, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2017.
So, I'm Nicky Spinks. This is me finishing the double Bob Graham, which is why I'm now famous. I was not famous before that. I am actually just a farmer and a fell runner, and then I went and did the double Bob Graham. But I do lots of talks about running, but today the brief was to not do my normal talk, so I won't be boring you with running up and down mountains and being sick, which is what I do a lot of. I'm going to talk to you today about the whole event here is about doing, and I want to talk to you about what that means to me. And because a lot of my values in life are based on the people that are important to me in my life and events that have happened to me in my life, I'm going to sort of run through all that and hopefully give you some ideas to take away with you. So I was born in 67, so I'm now 50. I've got a brother who's about a year younger than me and a sister who's 4 years younger than me. As soon as we were sort of a little family, my dad got a contract out in Africa, and we went out there for 3 years. And it was a great place to be brought up as a little kid, because basically you could do exactly what you wanted. I can't remember. There was a school, but it was a very small little school. It was like an expat life, which I wouldn't have known as a three-year-old, but that's the sort of life we had. So we had everything we really wanted. And we went to see all the sights as well. I've got a lot of photos of those years, so looking back I can imagine that we were quite wealthy because we had a camera, and we were doing lots of things, so my parents were taking lots of photos. When we came back to England, we moved to Station House in Buckingham, and it's a big house, it's quite isolated. Again, it's a great place for a kid to be brought up because there's all the goods yards next door which were derelict, and we just roamed around there, did our own thing, went along the railway lines, which were, you know, dismantled, but we used to cycle and everything. So it was a great place. But looking back through the photos, I realised that there aren't any photos of me and my family then, and I just don't think it was a very happy time for my parents at that time. As a kid, I don't really remember any of it. This photo was actually taken later on, and I think one of the reasons is that my mother, she was in the, it was the hippie era then, and I remember quite a bit about her, but not doing anything really with her. One day she tried to teach us how to relax by lying me and my brother on the floor, which was quite funny because I was only about 8 or 9 and he was like 7, so he didn't get it at all. He just fidgeted all the way through. She was telling us how to start at your head and pretend you're really heavy and da-di-da. And I actually quite enjoyed it, and I still use it today. You know, I quite enjoyed it, but my brother just fidgeted the whole way through. And I remember going to a lot of hippie parties, and there was obviously quite a lot of drugs about, and adults not really behaving like they should, and kids just doing exactly what we wanted as usual. But I think the really unhappy thing that happened, that played one important sort of thing in my life that I remember, is when we went to France when I was 10 and she was 30, and my brother and my sister as well. We all went on this holiday, and when we got there, my father had taken us, dropped us off, and came back. And when he came to pick us up, she told him that she was going to stay there, and that was it. They were splitting up. And I was so angry with her that I wouldn't talk to her. And we were in the maxi, and I wouldn't talk to her at all. And we drove back to England with my dad, and the next day she died. And to me, that just, so now I have a big rule in my life is never ever to say anything in an argument with anybody that you love that you might regret, you know, any time, you just might regret it, because I never got to say to her how much I loved her, and I'm sure she felt the same about me. So that's, and now with my husband, you know, I've always said to people, you never tell me anything in an argument. I have, you know, there's a baseline that I will not cross. So we came back to England, and life was a bit of a trauma for a little bit while my dad sorted out the funeral and whatever over in France, which incidentally we never went to either, which I think nowadays is probably frowned upon that the kids should be more involved in that. But my dad is a lovely person, and you know, I love him to bits, but he does need a woman in his life to sort him out a little bit. And so he came, when he was left with three kids, he was desperately, not, I wouldn't say that on camera, but anyway, I think he was looking around for somebody to look after us. bless him. and he found Penny. Now, she's an aunt, it's a bit complicated, but she was an aunt. Penny came along, and me and her, I don't know if we're just totally alike, but we just fought all the way through my childhood. Well, as soon as she arrived, me and her, we just, I was the eldest. She had three kids. My dad had three kids, but and I ended up being the eldest, which is sort of special and sort of not, because you're the one that they just try everything out on you. And if it doesn't work, then by the time they get to the youngest one, they've perfected how to bring up kids, haven't they? So, yeah. So, yeah, we fought a lot, but now we have this total mutual respect. I mean, she was only 34. She'd just been lumped with six kids and a new, well, partner. So life must have been pretty tough for her. So I don't think it was, I think it was a learning curve for her. And we moved up to Glossop, which is a fantastic place. Again, a farm. We swapped that big house in Buckingham for a 46-acre farm in Glossop. And I loved it. It was a hard life. This is me wearing probably Penny's coat, looking for the cows in the cold and the mist. But it was a hard life, it was a cold life, but it was just great. I mean, again, I think now I think I don't like to be told what to do, because most of my childhood I was able to do what I wanted. And that's maybe when I met Penny and she said, oh, you can't do this, that and the other. I'm like, I will. And I got kicked out about three or four times eventually. I grew into a fairly sort of sullen, maybe a little bit of a confused teenager, because I wasn't quite, I just didn't really know what I wanted to do in life. I went into computers because that's what my dad was doing. The farm was not a working farm. He worked at ICI in Sheffield. But I think I just sort of was very, very confused as a teenager. A lot of people would like to go back in life, but I wouldn't actually want to be in my 20s, because I'm a lot happier now than I was then. And I got a job in computers. I was working in Manchester and in London. And my granddad lives in Welling, so my nana is in this photo. She'd died by then. And I just rang him up and said, Granddad, can I come and live with you? And he said, yeah. And it was a bit of a funny relationship to start with, because obviously, he's a granddad, and I was about early 20s, maybe 18, you know, but quite young. And he was always encouraging me to do whatever I wanted. He was a runner, and I used to run just to keep the weight off, because since I'd left the farm, I sort of ballooned out to about 10 stone and just needed to keep that off. And he just encouraged me without pushing me at all. This is a photo of him in Peru, and he was a great lover of, travel. He was a mineralogist when he was working, and he travelled the whole world, and he used to go on about all these wonderful places he'd been. And I actually went to Peru last year, and it's always been on my to-go list just because he raved about it so much, and had lots of little figurines as well of llamas and things. So yeah, when he died, he was completely the opposite of what I think my mum was like, even though he was her father. I was with him, I was living with him then, and I was with him the night he died, and he just looked at me and he said, please, Nicky, don't be sad. I've done everything in my life I've ever wanted to do. I'm really tired. I want to go. I want to join my wife. I don't want you to be sad. And that to me, that's where I now want to end up. I want to be like him when I die, ready to go. I mean, I might get taken earlier, but that's where I'm aiming to get to. And I mean, his death hit me really hard, because I'd never really loved anybody as much as him before. But I took his words to heart. And at the same time that I was just recovering from my granddad dying, I met Steve, a farmer from Yorkshire, who's also a skydiver. And I was skydiving at Doncaster. So I'd known him before, but I think, we hit it off right straight from the start. I fell sort of totally in love with him and him with me. He was 36 and I was 24, so the age gap was a bit of a shock to his mother, I think, most of all. I think everybody else was just like, well done, Steve. Especially the Yorkshire farmers. Yes, I certainly got a bit of like, oh, you're all right. You know where you are with Yorkshire farmers. After about 3 weeks of like travelling backwards and forwards to see him all the time, because obviously he couldn't leave the farm, I just thought, oh, sod this. And I just packed up and moved in with him. And I just thought, well, if it doesn't work, I'll have to just move back out again. But at the moment, it's free rent and it's a good do. And and I think I love this bloke. So, and yeah, I'm still with him today. So this is the farm in Yorkshire. We're only tenants, but it's a lovely place to live. A year after I met him, we went travelling because that's what he'd always wanted to do. And he was a dairy farmer and he was just going through a divorce. So it was a good time to leave the farm and go travelling. We could sort of mothball it. This is a picture of us in Burma. And I think with travelling, a lot of where I liked to live, the countries I liked, it was because of the people, and the people in Burma were so lovely and kind. The place is beautiful, but it was the people, and I don't know why I'm not... I think I did find travelling quite hard, though. I now realise I actually like England, and travelling made me realise what a great place England is. I mean, everyone moans about everything here, but it's one of the best places to live in the world. It's so green as well. There's a lot of places out there that are very dry and dusty. But, yeah, we've got everything here and we moan far too much about it. You know, when you see these kids in Africa and places, yeah, we moan a lot about this country and I think we need to sort of appreciate it a little bit more. But, yeah, travelling was great and we never got to South America, so we're trying to sort of knock that off one by one. That was like Peru. We're going to Argentina this Christmas. So it's hard with farming to get a holiday. Christmas is the best time. But there's my husband, yeah, and he tries running with me. He can't really keep up, but that's the Jurafel race last year. And, yeah, I mean, he's got a great smile on his face, but it was about 2 hours, I think, after when I finished, bless him. But he really does enjoy getting out, and he's always like... And I enter the races for him. I say, oh, you'll like this one, honest. So that's... And Steve is my biggest critic. If he was sat in the audience now, it would be him that I'd be watching going, is he laughing? Is he clapping? Because we're just really hard on each other. If we congratulate each other and say, well done, you know you've really done a good job. I mean, he's very... around the farm, I mean... mansplaining is just like, yeah, he takes it to the next degree. But yeah, no, I love him. And, you know, I think we're going to spend the rest of our lives together very happily. So the other important person in my life was my brother. Well, is my brother. He's still. Here's a little picture of us. Obviously quite a rough picture, but before my mum died. And... he's just been through everything with me, you know, good stuff, bad stuff. He got chucked out as well, so we helped each other financially when we were in our sort of early teenager. He's now got a good business, but it's not been easy for us sort of like when we were chucked out, but now we're like made up with the family. But he's always there for me and I'm always there for him. And I wouldn't ever like to choose between him and Steve. I just couldn't do it because it's funny to have a brother that you're so close with, but I think it's just been because we've been through so much in life. And also, he's only 11 months younger than me, so he's quite, you know, we're quite close in years as well. So this is me when I was doing one of my records and he'd come up and just look at the joy in his face. I mean, it's like he's done it himself. He's just fantastic. And then the last person who means so much to me, again, she's family, is my Aunt Maggie. She's the one in the blue stripey. because Steve and my cousin. So she's 81 now, and she's still going. You know, I went to see her last weekend, and you know, she was just busying around, saying what she, you know, which holiday she's going on next, and everything. And it's given me, because what comes next is, but the fact that Maggie's now 81 gives me a lot of hope in life, because that's all the people that mean a lot to me. But the one thing that changed my life considerably is when I got breast cancer in 2006. Because, well, I was 39, so although it was only 11 years ago, then I was a young person, now I'm 50. But, yeah, it just took the wind out of our sails. You know, there you are at 39, trundling along. You don't know anyone with cancer, really, except old people. And, yeah, and then you find this little lump. You go off to the one-stop clinic, and you come out, and your life's completely changed. They've just told you that it could, you know... You could be dead next year, or, well, they haven't told you, but that's what goes through your mind. So this was me trying to decide what to do when they told me that, the options that they gave me, and I needed to write it all down just to look at it. It wasn't making a lot of sense. Like, I can't even spell the word mastectomy there, so that's why I called it full breast off. It was just like either half, full, you know, what do you want? So yeah, I went for the full breast off, and I was quite lucky in that the test results came back quite clear, but you're never lucky when you get cancer, are you really? But this is me the day before my operation, so I'd still got the cancer. And we went up to a place in the Peak District called Rocking Stones. And I was just saying, you know, I was just breaking my life down a little bit into short distance goals, really. So the next one was going to be Christmas. If I survived to Christmas, I'd come back there and we'd celebrate. And yeah, and I survived till Christmas. And so we came back, the weather was a lot fouler. Could hardly find the stones, it was that foggy, but we did. And from then on, we've always celebrated small things in life, like, and it's not really birthdays. We rarely celebrate birthdays. Neither of us have got any idea what date we got married, actually. We never, somebody sent us a card once and we're just like, what's this, a wedding anniversary card? Is it yours? Totally forgotten that one. But no, we celebrate, like, the cows, when they finish calving, that's the last one to carve. Should we go out for our tea and celebrate? Or if we finished a stretch of wall, or if we're, you know, just little things like that, that's sort of like, wow, that's good, that's over with, let's celebrate that. And yeah, we just, I don't know, I can celebrate anything nowadays. I can go for a run, and even if I'm so tired and I don't want to be there and it's really hard, I just look out and go, actually, I'm here, and somebody else is probably stuck in the hospital and I'm here. And so, yeah, I'm having it, actually, yeah, sort yourself out. You're actually having a good time here. So when they asked me for a title for my talk, I thought of this One Life, Live It, because we always used to take the mick out of, we've got a Land Rover, and to live my life in a Land Rover would be purgatory, because if everyone's ever done a long journey in them, they are the most uncomfortablest things. I mean, how can they make the inside of a Land Rover so small? You know, they're quite big, but inside you're like this, and you're banging your elbows, a great big steering wheel, you can't see out, the windows are tiny. So, but on the other hand, if they want to live their life in a Land Rover, that's fine. Yeah, I'm also a believer in one, live life and let people live their own lives. So if that makes them happy, that's fine. But I always think you've got one life, and you need to make the most of it, really. And that's sort of what this whole event's about as well, making the most of your life. And it might not be that you've got years and years, so I always try and make the most of my life now. So that's why I sort of go out. If I think of something that I think I can do, then I just try and get it in. I mean, I can't not farm. I can't, you know, not have a relationship with my husband. I can't sort of be totally selfish about it. But I do try and sort of slot stuff in when I want to. And that's where, you know, 10 years celebrating the Bob, having cancer, I did the double Bob Graham. And it had been in my mind for a couple of years, and I just wanted to go and have a go. I just thought I could do it. It was more of a mind thing than a physical thing, because it's that breaking it down into small enough chunks that you think you can do them. So, and then as you've done one, then you look at the next one. But it wasn't sort of quite as easy as that. It was quite horrendously hard in the end. But the film doesn't show all the horrendously hard bits. And then for my 50th, which was this April, I did another challenge, because that's how I wanted to spend my birthday, on the hills with people I love, and my brother, his wife, and my niece, and Joss Naylor. It's a challenge for the over 50s, which is great. Something to look forward to when you get to 50. You could do the Joss Naylor challenge. And that's how I wanted to spend my 50th. So that's sort of the end of the talk. But what I was going to say is this sort of event is maybe about changing stuff, but maybe a lot of people need to do is step back from their life and look at their life. And maybe you're already doing exactly what you want to do. Because I coach people and I say to them, what do you want to achieve? And it's about what you want in your life and not what everybody else wants. And I think with the age of the internet nowadays, there's a lot of, you look at other people and you think they're doing a lot more than what you are, but actually you might be really happy with your life and there's nothing actually that needs changing. You just need to sort of appreciate it a little bit more. So that's probably my message to you is, yeah, you've probably all got really good lives.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.